जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, जामुना तीरा वनचारी, जामुना तीरा वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, जामुना तीरा वनचारी, जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद, श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री भासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. So this will be our first class on Srimad Bhagavatam. So, what is Srimad Bhagavatam? Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the relationship between God and His devotees. It's not just God alone, but it details different kinds of relationships that God has with His devotees. Now, later on, when we get to chapter 5, we will learn how Srimad Bhagavatam came to existence. And in the second canto, we learn about the original Bhagavatam. In chapter 5, we're going to learn about this Bhagavatam. But in the second canto, we will learn about the original Bhagavatam. The original Bhagavatam was spoken by Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan being Krishna's expansion. At the dawn of creation, after many, many years of penance and austerity, Lord Brahma finally got the meeting of Lord Narayan. When Lord Brahma is born, he's all alone. There is nobody except him. And he finds himself on top of a lotus flower. But he doesn't know anything else. He just finds himself alone on this lotus flower. But within his heart, he has a great desire to create. But he doesn't know how to do it. He hears two syllables, ta, pa. And he takes this, that he must do penances and austerities. So for many, many years, he performs meditation. And after a long time, Lord Narayan appears to him. Lord Narayan says to Lord Brahma, I am very pleased with you. And Lord Narayan shakes Lord Brahma's hand and says, you have done a good job. And then Brahma asks Krishna, Lord Narayan, how can I create? And teach me how to create in such a way that I won't become overcome by pride. So, Lord Narayan speaks 4 verses. And those 4 verses are called Chatu Shloki. Those are the original 4 verses of the Bhagavatam spoken by Lord Narayan to Brahma at the dawn of creation. That's all Lord Brahma has, are these 4 statements or 4 verses that Narayan speaks to him. And with those 4 verses, Brahma has enough information to engineer the creation of the universe. So that is the original Bhagavatam, 4 verses. And it's called Chatu Shloki. In Bhagavad Gita, there is a Chatu Shloki. Not in the same way, but just as there are 4 original verses of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says there are 4 essential verses of the Gita, which is found in chapter 10. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. So those 4 verses, chapter 10, verses 8, 9, 10, and 11. So, later, and we read in this 5th chapter of this 1st canto, because the book that we're studying has 18,000 verses. So how did it get from 4 to 18,000? So that will be explained in chapter 5, and I will briefly explain that. Early in the age of Kali, Vyasadeva is sitting on the bank of a river. He has a cottage there. And one day he wakes up, and within himself, he is feeling that something is missing. He's feeling within himself something is not right. And Vyasadeva begins to consider that I've already compiled and edited the one Veda and made it into four. I've already compiled the Puranas. I've already compiled the 108 Upanishads. I've already compiled the Mahabharata. And I've already written the most scholarly book known as Vedanta Sutra. So why am I still not satisfied? At that very moment, Vyasadeva's spiritual master, Narada Muni, arrives. And Vyasadeva asks his spiritual master, can you find out the root cause, the real reason why I'm not happy? And so Narada says to Vyasadeva, the reason you're not happy is that, yes, you did the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, you did Mahabharata, you did Vedanta Sutra, but you forgot to do one thing. You forgot to describe Krishna, and you forgot to put Krishna in his proper place as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You forgot to describe that actually the topmost thing is devotional service to Krishna. This is why you're not satisfied. So Narada says, now you should write Srimad Bhagavatam and explain how Krishna is supreme and how service to Krishna is the topmost thing that a human being or an entity can do. So Vyasadeva compiles Srimad Bhagavatam in 18,000 verses. Now we're going to study the first three verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the first three verses are like the mission statement. It sets the whole scene of what is Srimad Bhagavatam. So yes, verse number 1, 2, and 3. Now, chapter 1 is entitled Questions by the Sages. I will explain now the summary of chapter 1. Before we go to the first three verses, I will explain the summary of chapter 1. Questions by the Sages. After we study these first three introductory verses, we find ourselves in the dawn of Kali Yuga, and we are in India, in a place called Naimisharanya. And there in Naimisharanya, there is a large congregation of saintly persons. And they are doing a sacrifice. They're doing this sacrifice for us, the people of Kali Yuga. And the reason they're doing this sacrifice is because the sages know how terrible, how sinful, how inauspicious it is to live in Kali Yuga. And therefore, to help us, the sages are doing a sacrifice. So, don't you have a question? The sages of Naimisharanya are very compassionate for the people of Kali, because the age of Kali is the age of quarrel, strife, hypocrisy. Just bad things happen one after another. They have selected someone as their acharya, just as you have invited me to speak. The sages of Naimisharanya, they have selected Suta Goswami, and they want to hear from him what he heard when the Bhagavatam was originally spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, because he was there. So when Maharaj Parikshit heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami said and predicted that later you, Suta, will again speak this Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya. It's already stated, Shukadev, because he can see the future, you will see in 12th canto, before Shukadev leaves, and just before Maharaj Parikshit gets bitten by the snake bird, Shukadeva Goswami says, this Suta Goswami sitting here, he is going to speak this Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages of Naimisharanya want to hear from Suta Goswami what he heard when Bhagavatam was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami for the first time. Vyasadeva wrote it, and Shukadeva spoke it. The leader of the sages of Naimisharanya is Shaunaka Rishi. Now, let me tell you about Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami, who is going to speak Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya, his father was killed by Lord Balaram. There is a story in Krishna book about Romaharshan Suta. And Romaharshan Suta was speaking in front of so many sages. But when Balaram entered, because Balaram was touring South India, Balaram entered, all the sages stood up. All the sages stood up, but Romaharshan said, I'm sitting on the Vyasasan, I don't have to get up. But Balaram became angry. And Balaram said, no, he should have stood up because I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Balaram took a piece of kusha grass. It's a kind of grass. There are different kinds of grasses. So there's this one kind of grass which is used in Vedic sacrifices, kusha grass. Balaram took one piece of kusha grass and touched the body of Romaharshan Suta and killed him on the spot, because Balaram is all-powerful. So Balaram did many things to satisfy the sages. And one of the things he did, because the sages had given Romaharshan Suta benedictions. So the sages said, because Balaram said, if you like, I can bring Romaharshan back to life. But he can do that because he's God. But the sages said, no, you don't have to bring him back to life. So Balaram then took all the sages' blessings and awarded it to Romaharshan's son. That is Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami has all these blessings from saintly rishis and sadhus. And so he is very special, Sutta Goswami. So that Sutta Goswami is asked various questions by the sages of Naimisharanya in this first chapter. They ask him 6 questions. And in the next chapter, those 6 questions are begun to be answered. Now, that's a gist of chapter 1. Sutta Goswami is the Acharya. The sages of Naimisharanya are going to ask him 6 questions. And in chapters 2 and 3, Sutta Goswami will answer those 6 questions. Hold on. So now let's look at the first 3 verses of the Bhagavatam. So now, let's look at verse number 1. Okay? Now, for me, I need to chant verse number 1. Because this verse, verse number 1, is very, very powerful. Was that? If you like. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasya Yato Anvayat Itaratas Charteshva Vigyasvarat Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adikavaye Muhyanti Yatsuraya Tejo Vadi Mradang Yata Vinimanyo Yatra Trisargo Mrasha Dhamna Svena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam Satyang Parang Dimahi. All right. Now the translation. O my Lord Sri Krishna, Son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead. So that, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So that's the translation of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. When we chant that, that's the translation of that sloka, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yes, you must have a different version, but that's all right. The differences will be minor. It's okay. Yes. Then the verse continues. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the 3 modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So your translation is a little different than what I just read? Or is it the same? Okay. You have a question? Is explain the verse, then we'll do the purport. Okay? So, it says, O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead. Now, Prabhupada in the translation is giving you two definitions of the word Vasudeva. So there's your first note. The two definitions of Vasudeva, one is son of Vasudev, right? Because Krishna's father was Vasudev, correct? Now Prabhupada is also giving you the other definition of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead. All-pervading means everywhere. In every atom, in everyone's heart. All-pervading. Yes. Yes. And that name is Vasudeva. One who is all-pervading. Okay? Then he says, I offer my respectful obeisances to you. Then he says, I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna, because when you say Vasudev, if he's the son of Vasudev, that can only mean Krishna. Can't mean anybody else. Correct? So the son of Vasudev is Krishna. Now, why does he meditate on Krishna? Because he's the absolute truth. The absolute truth means everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is sustained by Krishna. And in the end, everything will enter into Krishna. So that's the absolute truth. The absolute truth means everything comes from it. Everything is sustained by it. And everything will ultimately enter into it. Then he says, the primeval cause of all causes. Primeval means original, oldest. Cause of all causes. Because everything is a matter of cause and effect. For instance, Mahesh, your son was caused by you. He didn't cause you. You were caused by your father, who was caused by his father, and it goes all the way back to Lord Brahma. So, everything has a cause. But here, the verse is saying, Krishna is the cause of all causes. And specifically, creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He's talking about the material universes. Then he says, he is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. That's another aspect of God, that he is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. Sometimes people ask me, well, who created God? And that answer is, that question has no meaning. Because by definition, God has no origin. There is no origin of Krishna. Lord Brahma, we read and we heard today from me how Brahma is appearing on a lotus stem. That lotus stem came from Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. So Brahma's cause is Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. But Garbhodakshayi Vishnu has a cause, and that is Mahavishnu, and he has a cause, and he has a cause, and it goes all the way back to Krishna. But Krishna has no cause. That is why he is the absolute truth. He has no other cause other than himself. He is independent. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. That story I told you at the beginning. Not Krishna directly, but Krishna in the form of Narayan. Because Narayan is just another form of Krishna. Yes? By him, meaning Krishna, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. We call that a mirage. You know what a mirage is? A mirage means something looks real, but it's not. When you're, what does it say here? Land seen on water. The phenomena is when you've been on the sea for a long, 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 long time, your mind plays a trick on you and you think, oh, just coming up is land. But it's not. Or somebody in the desert for many, 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 many hours and hours walking in the desert, you imagine that there's an oasis, that there's water there, but it's called a mirage. Your mind creates something that doesn't exist. Now we're going to answer your original question, okay?
You know, sometimes on the road, we think when it's like really hot outside or the sun, sometimes you think it's like water or something. Is that
exactly? It's a mirage. It's not real, but it looks like there's something there. A mirage, yes. Okay. All right, let's continue. So the universe is have a temporary manifestation. And how are they manifested? By the three modes of nature. Everything in this material world is a combination of the three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Some things are purely in goodness, some things are purely in passion. Some things are purely in ignorance, and many, many, many things, they're a combination of these modes. Even our own body is a combination. The kind of birth that someone takes, the kind of body they have, is a combination of the three modes of nature. Appear factual, although they are unreal. And that was your question. Yes? So we're discussing the material universes appear factual, although they are unreal. Now, this goes into a very important concept in the Bhagavatam. And I'm sure you have heard me speak on this many times, how the material world is a dream. Have you heard me explain this before? I've talked about it many times, but perhaps you don't remember. I will explain it now. You've had dreams, correct? I had one last night. I had a dream. While you're in the dream, it seems very real, doesn't it?
Yes.
But when you wake up, you realize, oh, it was just a dream. But when you wake up, yes, while it's happening, it's very real. But when you wake up, you realize it was just a dream. You understand? That's what's being stated here. Everything in this material world has a temporary existence. And you've heard me say this many times. The day is going to come when you see that all this stuff that happened was just a dream. That day will come. So, the material universes temporarily manifested appear factual. So this is what's throwing you off. Appear factual. Factual means that something exists forever. That's factual. But we all know nothing remains forever in this material world. That's the idea here. The idea here is factual meaning it doesn't have permanent existence. Krishna, the spiritual world, and the soul have factual existence. You are now studying the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, yes? And you read the verses where Krishna is explaining the difference between the body and the soul. So there was a verse in chapter 2 where it was stated, that which has temporary existence is material, and that which has permanent existence is spiritual. So that's the idea here. This whole material world, because it has temporary existence, in that sense, it is unreal. It is not factual. Factual means something which always exists, like the soul, like God. Anything else which has temporary existence is not considered factual. Does that help you? The dream existed for the length of the dream. But once you wake up from the dream, you realize it's not a fact. It was a dream. And this whole material cosmic manifestation will one day cease to exist. Everything. It already happened a billion times already. Because the creation and maintenance and destruction have been going on and on and on and on for millions of years. That will be explained later in the Bhagavatam. In essence, everything reverts to its cause. Earth reverts to water, reverts to fire, reverts to air, reverts to sky, becomes subtle, 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 and everything enters the body of Mahavishnu. Just as there is a generating concept, Bhagavatam will explain how the universe is generated, there is an opposite process. Let's finish up. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode. That is important. That even though the material world is constantly being created and destroyed, Krishna and his abode exists. That's factual. Not El Segundo. El Segundo is temporarily existing. But when everything is dissolved, Krishna and his abode is ever existing. That's fact. You got that? Eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. Since the material world has temporary existence, that is why it's called illusory. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So now you want to read the purport. Okay, no problem. Purport. Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, directly indicate Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki. This fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Sri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary means full, plenary portions or portions of the portion. Srila Jiva Goswami has even more explicitly explained the subject matter in his Krishna Sandarbha. And Brahma, the original living being, has explained the subject of Sri Krishna substantially in his treatise named Brahma Sanghita. In the Samaveda Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Sri Krishna is the divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord, and if any transcendental nomenclature means a kind of language or words nomenclature, just like everything has its, like there's a sports language, there's political language. I'm sure in your field there are certain words. And if I was to hang out with you, you and your co-workers would speak in a way and I'd have to ask you, what are you guys talking about? But you understand the nomenclature. There's devotee nomenclature, right? Hari Bol and so many different things. Okay. And if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means the all-attractive. In Bhagavad Gita, in many places, the Lord asserts himself to be the original personality of Godhead. And this is confirmed by Arjuna and also by great sages like Narada, Vyasa, and many others. In the Padma Purana, it is also stated that out of the innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one. Vasudeva indicates the plenary What does that word mean? Full. Plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudev are indicated in this text. The name Vasudev particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. Sri Krishna is always meditated upon by the Paramahansas, who are the perfected ones among those in the renounced order of life. You have a question. There are two categories of God's expansions: personal and separated. The personal expansions are the six different kinds of avatars. The separated ones are the living entities, the jiva. They are considered expansions of God, but they do not have the full potency of God. We have minute, so we are the minute expansions of God, and the different incarnations are the infinite expansions of God, because they have his same potency. The technical term is Svangsha and Vibhinangsha. Svangsha is two words, Sva-angsha, personal forms, personal expansions, beginning with Balaram. Balaram is Krishna's first expansion. And then there are so many expansions afterwards. The Vibhina Angsha are the innumerable living entities like me and you. Those are the two expansions of God. Vasudeva, or Lord Sri Krishna, is the cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. How this is so is explained in later chapters of this work. This work is described by Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya as the spotless Purana, because it contains the transcendental narration of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So, this phrase, spotless Purana, will be explained more in verse number 2. Spotless Purana means there is not one pinch of material consciousness in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why it's called spotless. The exact term, Amala Purana. That's what makes Srimad Bhagavatam so special. And as I said, we will learn that in verse number 2. The history of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also very glorious. It was compiled by Sri Vyasadeva after he had attained maturity in transcendental knowledge. He wrote this under the instructions of Sri Naradaji, his spiritual master. I think I already explained that. Vyasadeva compiled all Vedic literatures containing the four divisions of the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutras or Brahma Sutras, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, and so on. But nevertheless, he was not satisfied. His dissatisfaction was observed by his spiritual master, and thus Narada advised him to write on the transcendental activities of Lord Sri Krishna. So, Prabhupada is confirming what I spoke about at the beginning. These transcendental activities are described specifically in the 10th canto of this work. But in order to reach to the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. Krishna book is special. Even though it is the 10th canto, Prabhupada would like you to read Krishna book, even if you have not read 9 cantos of Bhagavatam, because the way he wrote that, you will understand it properly because Prabhupada is explaining it as you read it. So, the first book I ever read was Krishna book. So, Krishna book is special. Because even though, as he said here, you should go step by step, because of the way he wrote it, if someone goes right to Krishna book, there won't be any mistake, because the way Prabhupada did it, you won't be misled. Prabhupada explains things in such a way that you won't misunderstand. The reason why you don't want to skip to the 10th canto is because unless you understand what is Krishna, then you may misunderstand and think, oh, Krishna danced with others' wives, let me do the same thing. But that kind of thought will not happen even if you read Krishna book because of the way Prabhupada wrote it. It's foolproof. And anyone who reads Krishna book will become a devotee like me. Krishna book is the 10th canto, but with proper explanation. If you're going to study Bhagavatam, we're doing it the right way, from Canto 1. If you decide that you want to read Krishna book, you start with the preface, and you go chapter by chapter. That is also good. You can read Bhagavatam and Krishna book side by side. You'll not have any problem because of the way Prabhupada wrote it. He explains everything you need to know so that you don't misunderstand. Shall we continue? Now Prabhupada has a different train of thought now. He's finished one concept. Now the purport is going to go to a different direction. Okay? It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky, and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man, because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. He is not only the creator of the universe, but the destroyer as well. So now, implication there, because we all know, how does the universe get destroyed? Lord Shiva does his dance. So Lord Shiva is empowered by Krishna to do that dance. So that is why it says here that it is annihilated by his will. Lord Shiva only does that dance when he's told to, not independently. It's by the will of Krishna that the universe is destroyed. Therefore, yes, because we read in the translation, directly and indirectly, Krishna himself has better things to do than to do it himself. So, Krishna delegates. For instance, in your job, your boss doesn't do anything. He tells all the other people, you do this, you do this, you do this. So Krishna has so many servants to do all the things, especially in the material world. Krishna doesn't care about the material world. So when it comes to such a task as destroying the world, let Shiva do it. Same way, why is Brahma creating? Brahma's creating. Yeah, let him create. Vishnu maintains. So in this way, Krishna is delegating different things for everybody. Yes?
Why doesn't Krishna care about the material world?
Well, we just read. It's a dream. Krishna has the spiritual world, reality. That brings up the question. If it's a fact that Krishna doesn't really care about the material world, then why does the material world exist? Good question. The material world exists only because we want it. If nobody wanted the dream of material existence, it would cease to exist. Yes? You, me, we all are. We didn't ask for that. What did we ask for? Ha! And you heard me tell him this story many times. Originally, we were where? Thank you. What happened one day? Ah! Now, you didn't ask for suffering, but what did you want? You already had that. You wanted to imitate Krishna. That's what you wanted. But Krishna says, you cannot imitate me in my abode. You'll have to go to El Segundo. Now you can imitate me. Now, the next question is, so why doesn't Krishna make it that this material world is wonderful? Why does he make it a world of suffering? Bhagavad Gita even says that. Dukhalaya mashasvatam, right? The Bhagavad Krishna says this world is temporary and full of misery. So some people say, well, if God is so great, why did he make this a world of suffering? The answer is, if he didn't, then you would remain in this material world, in the dream, forever. But Krishna wants you to come back. Krishna cares about you. So Krishna allows you to live out your fantasy. But the way the world works, one day you realize, I've had enough. I want to come back. That's why. If he didn't, we would remain in this material world forever. So Krishna is kind that he creates this material world in such a way that eventually you realize this is not where I want to be. I want to come back. For instance, I was in India like a week or so ago. But my health was not good. So I said, I want to go back home. And I was crying because I was worried. And I was really worried. So I said, I want to come back home. And Krishna made the arrangement. I got a flight the next day, just like that. And within 2 days, 3 days, I was back home. So, the day will come when the conditioned soul will say to Krishna, I want to come back home. For me, that was 1973. You were born in a Krishna family, yes? When did you know about Krishna?
At a young age. We did go to the Detroit Temple occasionally.
So from a very young age. And when did you realize that you want to become a devotee? How old were you?
It was back in 1997 or so.
For me, I was 23. How old were you? Around that same age?
Around.
Yes. Your son, he's born into Krishna consciousness. Okay? Did I answer that question? Shall we go back? The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. Okay? We read that. Of course, there are atheists of various categories who do not believe in a creator. But that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites, and by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time at the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead. And you will learn more about that in Canto 5. In Canto 5, you will learn just how it is that this universe is set up by Krishna. Yes, that is coming in Canto 5. All right. Next paragraph. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities, and the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence, and he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, One can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshwara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence, addressed as the Para, or the Parameshwara, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshwara is Sri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in this Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other Paratattva or summum bonum than Himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the Paratattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. Yes.
What exactly does that mean?
Parameshwara, Supreme Controller. Parameshwara becomes Parameshwara. Parama means supreme, Ishwara means controller. Let's continue. Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto, and especially to the 5 chapters which describe the Lord's rasa dance. This portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of this great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called rasa dance and his love affairs with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahansa can transcendentally relish this rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva, therefore, gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes a Gayatri mantra, Dhimahi. This Gayatri mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. When one is successful in chanting the Gayatri mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire Brahminical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri mantra successfully, and then attain to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord, His name, His fame, His qualities, and so on. Yes. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the Swarup of the Lord, manifested by His internal potency. And this potency is distinguished from the external potency which has manifested the cosmic world, which is within our experience. Sri Vyasadeva makes a clear distinction between the two in this shloka. Sri Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, whereas the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and illusory, like the mirage in the desert, which we talked about. In the desert mirage, there is no actual water. There is only the appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The manifested cosmic creation appears as reality. But reality, of which this is but a shadow, is in the spiritual world. I already said that. Absolute truth is in the spiritual sky, not the material sky. In the material sky, everything is relative truth. That is to say, one truth depends on something else. This cosmic creation results from interaction of the three modes of nature. And the temporary manifestations are so created as to present an illusion of reality to the bewildered mind of the conditioned soul, who appears in so many species of life, including the higher demigods like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and so on. In actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality, however, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with his transcendental paraphernalia. Yes? You can, yes, you can, but you can only go to Vaikuntha if there are no more material desires.
So in other words, you can fall from Brahma and come back down?
The only way you can enter the spiritual world is that you have no more material desires.
Then how is it that a person likes devotional service and likes devotees and likes to hear Krishna Katha, but at the same time, isn't it like conflicting, but at the same time has material desires? I mean, are those conflicting things?
Well, everybody is coming to Krishna from different degrees of material contamination. So, you start out with material desires, but gradually, by the process of Krishna consciousness, little by little, you come to the stage of no more material desires. Everybody starts off at some point, but the process of hearing and chanting gradually purifies you, and then you come to the stage of no more material desire.
So can gradual mean several lifetimes?
It could be. That could very well be. Or it can be in this lifetime. What are you thinking? Okay. Next paragraph. The chief engineer of a complicated construction does not personally take part in the construction, but he knows every nook and corner because everything is done under his direction. He knows everything about the construction, both directly and indirectly. Similarly, the personality of Godhead, who is the supreme engineer of this cosmic creation, knows every nook and corner, although affairs are being carried out by demigods. Beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, no one is independent in the material creation. The hand of the Lord is seen everywhere. All material elements, as well as all spiritual sparks, emanate from Him only. And whatever is created in this material world is but the interaction of two energies, the material and the spiritual, which emanate from the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. A chemist can manufacture water in the chemical laboratory by mixing hydrogen and oxygen. But in reality, the living entity works in the laboratory under the direction of the Supreme Lord. And the materials with which he works are also supplied by the Lord. The Lord knows everything directly and indirectly, and he is cognizant of all minute details, and he is fully independent. He is compared to a mine of gold, and the cosmic creations in so many different forms are compared to objects made from the gold, such as gold rings, necklaces, and so on. The gold ring and the gold necklace are qualitatively one with the gold in the mind, but quantitatively the gold in the mind is different. Therefore, the Absolute Truth is simultaneously one and different. Nothing is absolutely equal with the Absolute Truth, but at the same time, nothing is independent of the Absolute Truth. Conditioned souls, beginning from Brahma, who engineers the entire universe, down to the insignificant ant, are all creating. But none of them are independent of the Supreme Lord. The materialist wrongly thinks that there is no creator other than his own self. This is called Maya or illusion. Because of his poor fund of knowledge, the materialist cannot see beyond the purview of his imperfect senses. And thus he thinks that matter automatically takes its own shape without the aid of a superior intelligence. This is refuted in this shloka by Srila Vyasadeva. Quote, since the complete whole or the Absolute Truth is the source of everything, nothing can be independent of the body of the Absolute Truth. End of quote. Whatever happens to the body quickly becomes known to the embodied. Similarly, the creation is the body of the Absolute Whole. Therefore, the Absolute knows everything directly and indirectly that happens in the creation. In the Shruti Mantra, it is also stated that the Absolute Whole, or Brahman, is the ultimate source of everything. Everything emanates from him, and everything is maintained by him, and at the end, everything enters into him. I already mentioned that as well. That is the law of nature. In the Smriti Mantra, the same is confirmed. It is said that the source from which everything emanates at the beginning of Brahma's millennium, and the reservoir to which everything ultimately enters, is the Absolute Truth, or Brahman. Yes. Okay, there are different kinds of shastras. So, that which is heard directly from the authority is called Shruti. And that which is derived from the Shruti is called Smriti. So some Vedic literatures are Shruti, meaning directly spoken by authority. And another kind of Vedic book is books which base themselves on what the authority says, and they have drawn various conclusions, and they are called Smriti.
Can you give me examples of each?
Bhagavad Gita is considered Smriti. The four Vedas and 108 Upanishads are called Shruti. That's the only examples I can give. Material scientists take it for granted that the ultimate source of the planetary system is the sun. But they are unable to explain the source of the sun. Herein, the ultimate source is explained. According to Vedic literatures, Brahma, who may be compared to the sun, is not the ultimate creator. It is stated in this shloka that Brahma was taught Vedic knowledge by the personality of Godhead. One may argue that Brahma, being the original living being, could not be inspired because there was no other being living at that time. Herein it is stated that the Supreme Lord inspired the secondary creator, Brahma, in order that Brahma could carry out his creative functions. So the supreme intelligence behind all creations is the absolute Godhead, Sri Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna states that it is he only who superintends the creative energy, Prakriti, which constitutes the totality of matter. The verse Prabhupada is referring to is chapter 9, verse 10, there. Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva does not worship Brahma, but the Supreme Lord who guides Brahma in his creative activities. In this shloka, the particular words abhigya and swarat are significant. These two words distinguish the Supreme Lord from all the other living entities. No other living entity is either abhigya or swarat. That is, no one is either fully cognizant or fully independent. Even Brahma has to meditate upon the Supreme Lord in order to create. Then what to speak of great scientists like Einstein? The brains of such a scientist are certainly not the products of any human being. Scientists cannot manufacture such a brain. And what to speak of foolish atheists who defy the authority of the Lord? Even Mayavadi impersonalists who flatter themselves that they can become one with the Lord are neither abhigya or swarat. Such impersonalists undergoes severe austerities to acquire knowledge to become one with the Lord. But ultimately, they become dependent on some rich disciple who supplies them with money to build monasteries and temples. Atheists like Ravana or Hiranyakashipu had to undergo severe penances before they could flout the authority of the Lord. But ultimately, they were rendered helpless and could not save themselves when the Lord appeared before them as cruel death. This is also the case with the modern atheists who also dare to flout the authority of the Lord. Such atheists will be dealt with similarly, for history repeats itself. Whenever men neglect the authority of the Lord, nature and her laws are there to penalize them. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the well-known verse, Yada yada hi dharmasya glani. Whenever there is a decline of dharma and a rise of adharma, O Arjuna, then I incarnate myself. Yes.
It says that God appeared before Ravana and others as cruel death.
Yes.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is that, like, Ravana, they were in the material world. Maybe I'm just thinking about it too much, but the material world doesn't exist.
Oh, no. It has temporary existence. And God still appears. Didn't he appear 5,000 years ago? So it's a dream, but while you're in the dream, it's happening. Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kamsa, they got killed, and Krishna or God appeared to them. Not lovingly, but as cruel death. Nrisimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu. That's how he saw God. Ravana was killed by Ram. And Kamsa was killed by Krishna. So even though it's the material world, and the material world has temporary existence and is a dream, still, these things are happening, just like you. You're also in the dream. But don't you have to go to work? And aren't there so many things going on? So, same way with Ravan, Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, they existed in this material world. I'm not past any time. I don't know anything about time.
I did have another
question. My time is your time. I'll stay as long as you like. I'll stay to midnight.
I did have another question in connection to what you just said. So when Krishna came here, like, because they say, like, Gokul Vrindavan is, like, Golok Vrindavan is an eternal God. But, like, that area was, like, regular, like, Earth before Krishna descended, but then it became Dham after his...
No, it's eternally the Dham. Eternally.
But Krishna came 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, but even before Krishna was, it's still the Dham. It's still Vrindavan. Like right now. Krishna's pastimes in India is going on right now. We can't see, but it's happening.
But what about prior to him coming 5,000 years?
If it's now, it was before. Didn't Krishna leave 5,000 years ago? Did I not say that the pastimes are going on? So they were going on before, just that we can't see them. But then they become manifest. They become manifest.
Which means we're just able to see them?
Right. 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 Those dhams are eternally existing.
So when Shiva, when Shiva destroys everything, that's still there.
Exactly how that is, I don't know. But yes, the dhams are, they're eternal dhams. Now, I can't give you a detailed explanation, but the dham is eternal. You wish to continue?
Yeah. Do we have time to get through the first verse?
As I said, my time is your time.
Then I better stop asking questions.
No, that's up to you. Don't worry about me. As I said, I'm prepared to stay till midnight. Are you ready to continue? That the Supreme Lord is all perfect is confirmed in all Shruti mantras. It is said in the Shruti mantras that the all perfect Lord threw a glance over matter and thus created all living beings. The living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord, and he impregnates the vast material creation with seeds of spiritual sparks. And thus, the creative energies are set in motion to enact so many wonderful creations. An atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker. But of course, God is greater because he can create machines in duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he would approach the intelligence of God. But that is not possible, for each machine has to be handled individually. Therefore, no one can create as well as God. Another name for God is Asammurdva. Now, I have mentioned this word thousands of times over the years. Another name for God is Asammurdva, which means that no one is equal to or greater than him. Parang Satyam, or the Supreme Truth, is he who has no equal or superior. This is confirmed in the Shruti mantras. It is said that before the creation of the material universe, there existed the Lord only, who is master of everyone. That Lord instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge. That Lord has to be obeyed in all respects. Anyone who wants to get rid of the material entanglement must surrender unto him. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Unless one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that he will be bewildered. When an intelligent man surrenders unto the lotus feet of Krishna and knows completely that Krishna is the cause of all causes, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, then only can such an intelligent man become a Mahatma or great soul. But such a great soul is rarely seen. Only the Mahatmas can understand that the Supreme Lord is the primeval cause of all creations. He is Parama, or ultimate truth, because all other truths are relative to him. He is omniscient. For him, there is no illusion. Now Prabhupada is going to go now in a different direction. Okay? Some Mayavadi scholars argue that Srimad Bhagavatam was not compiled by Sri Vyasadeva, and some of them suggest that this book is a modern creation written by someone named Vopadev. In order to refute such meaningless arguments, Sri Sridhar Swami points out that there is reference to the Bhagavatam in many of the oldest Puranas. The first sloka of the Bhagavatam begins with the Gayatri Mantra. There is reference to this in the Matsya Purana, which is the oldest Purana. In that Purana, it is said with reference to the Gayatri Mantra in the Bhagavatam that there are many narrations of spiritual instructions beginning with the Gayatri Mantra. And there is the history of Vitrasura. Anyone who makes a gift of this great work on a full moon day attains to the highest perfection of life by returning to Godhead. There is reference to the Bhagavatam in other Puranas also, where it is clearly stated that this work was finished in 12 cantos, which include 18,000 shlokas. In the Padma Purana... Okay, yes.
Did you just read that if you give the Srimad Bhagavatam as a gift to somebody on the day of a full moon, you go back to God?
If that's what it says, that's what it says. I take everything Prabhupada says as it is. Okay? There is reference to the Bhagavatam in other Puranas also, where it is clearly stated that this work was finished in 12 cantos, which include 18,000 shlokas. In the Padma Purana also, there is reference to the Bhagavatam in a conversation between Gautama and Maharaj Ambarish. The king was advised therein to read regularly Srimad Bhagavatam if he desired liberation from material bondage. Under the circumstances, there is no doubt about the authority of the Bhagavatam. Within the past 500 years, many erudite scholars and acharyas, like Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Vallabhacharya, and many other distinguished scholars, even after the time of Lord Chaitanya, made elaborate commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And the serious student would do well to attempt to go through them to better relish the transcendental messages. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adi Ras, devoid of all mundane inebriety. Now, this next part is in italics, so that means it's special. The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is in the absolute truth, and thus the absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life because they have overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. Consequently, man, without information of the actual spiritual form of sex has accepted perverted material sex life as the all in all. There is a distinction between sex life in the diseased material condition and spiritual sex life. This Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. It will enable him to transcend the three modes of material activities, namely fruitive actions, speculative philosophy, and worship of functional deities as inculcated in Vedic verses. And that is verse number 1.